In a savage, ravaging frenzy of jealousy and outrage, he was hitting Larimar, punching him, hammering him, unable to stop. His voice so tight with frustration, its pitch rose to a squeal as Jondalar screamed, "He's making my baby! He's making my baby!" repeating it over and over again, "He's making my baby!" Some men tried to drag him away, but he shook them off. In his maddened fury, his strength was almost superhuman. Several more tried to pull him away, but he was wild. They couldn't contain him. Then as Jondalar pulled back to pound his fist once more into the bloody mass of raw meat unrecognizable as a face, a massive hand grabbed his wrist. Jondalar struggled as he felt himself being pulled away from the unconscious man who was sprawled out on the ground, close to death. He fought to free himself from the two enormous, powerful arms that restrained him, but he couldn't break loose. As Danug held him off, Zelandani cried, "Jondalar! Jondalar! Stop! You'll kill him!" He vaguely recognized the familiar voice of the woman he once knew as Zolina and recalled hitting a young man over her. Then his mind went blank. While several of the Zelandania rushed in to attend to Larimar, the burly red-haired giant picked Jondalar up in his arms like a baby and carried him away. Chapter 37 Zelandani gave Ayla one of the tightly woven reed cups that had been specially made for the festival, nearly full of hot tea made of herbs that would be relaxing. She put another cup on a low table, then sat down on the large stool beside Ayla's stool. They were alone in the large Zelandania dwelling, except for the unconscious man, his face wrapped in soft skins that held healing poultices in place, lying on a nearby bed. Several lamps cast a warm glow of soft light around the injured man, and two more were on a low table that held the teacups.
"I've never seen him like that," Ayla said. "Why did he do it, Zelandani?"
"Because you were with Larimar."
"But it was a mother festival. I am Zelandani now. I'm supposed to share the mother's gift at festivals that honor the mother, aren't I?" Ayla said.
"Everyone is supposed to honor the mother at her festivals, and you always have, but never before with anyone except Jondalar," the large woman said.
"Just because I haven't done it before with anyone else shouldn't make any difference. After all, he's been coupling with Morona," Ayla said.
Zelandani noticed a touch of defensiveness in her voice.
"Yes, but you weren't available when he did. You know men often share the mother's gift of pleasure with other women when their mates are not within easy reach, don't you?"
the one who was first asked.
"Yes, of course," Ayla said,
looking down quickly, then took a sip of her tea.
"Does the thought of Jondalar choosing another woman bother you, Ayla?"
"Well, he never has chosen anyone else, not as long as I've known him," Ayla said,
looking at the woman with earnest concern.
"How could I know him so little? I can't believe what he did. I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't been there. First he sneaks around with Morona, and I found out he's been doing it for a long time. Then he... Why Morona?"
"How would you feel if it was someone else?"
Ayla looked down again.
"I don't know."
She looked up at Zelandani again.
"Why didn't he come to me if he wanted to satisfy his needs? I have never refused him. Never."
"Maybe that's why. Maybe he knew you were tired or deeply involved in something you were learning, and he didn't want to impose himself on you when he knew you would not refuse him," Zelandani said. "And there were some times when you were required to forego certain things for a period of time. Pleasures, food, even water."
"But why Morona? If it had been another woman, anyone else, I think I would have understood. I might not have liked it, but I would have understood. Why that woman?
Perhaps because she offered.
Ayla looked so puzzled, Zelandani went on to explain.
Everyone was aware that neither you nor Jandalar ever chose anyone else, Ayla, not even at mother festivals. Before he left, Jandalar was always available, especially then. He had such a strong drive, one woman was seldom enough for him. It was like he was never quite satisfied until he came back with you. Not long after he returned, women stopped trying. If you don't make yourself available, no one offers. Most women don't like being refused. But Morona didn't care. It was so easy for her to have any man she wanted. A refusal just made it a challenge. Jandalar became a special challenge, I think.
I can't believe how little I know him.
Ayla shook her head, took another sip of tea.
Zelandani, he almost killed Lermar. His face will never be the same. If Danuk hadn't been here, I'm not sure Lermar would still be alive. No one else could stop him.
It was one of the things I was afraid would happen after we told the people about a man's role in starting new life, though I didn't expect it to happen this way, or quite so soon. I knew problems would come up once we told the men, but I thought we'd have more time to work them out.
I don't understand, Ayla said, frowning again. I would have thought men would be happy to know that they were necessary for new life to begin, just as necessary as women, that it was the reason the mother made them.
They may be happy, but once they understand the implications, men may want to be sure that the children of their hearths are more than the children of their mates. They may want to know that the children they provide for came from them.
Why should it matter? It never has before. Men have always provided for their mates' children. Most men have been pleased when their mates brought children to their hearths. Why would they suddenly want to provide for only their own? Ayla said.
It may turn out to be a thing of pride. They may get possessive of their mates and their children, the first said.
Ayla took a drink of tea and thought for a while, frowning.
How would they know for sure? It's the woman who gives birth. The only thing any man can know without doubt is that the baby is the child of his mate.
The only way a man can be sure is if a woman shares pleasures with only her mate, Zelandani said. Like you, Ayla.
Ayla's frown deepened.
But what about mother festivals? Most women look forward to them. They want to honor the mother, to share her gift of pleasures with more than one man.
Yes, most women do, and men too. It adds excitement and interest to their lives.
Most women also want a mate to help take care of her children, Zelandani said.
Some women don't have mates. Their mothers and aunts and brothers help them, especially with a newborn. Even the cave helps women take care of their children. Children have always been provided for, Ayla said.
That's true, but things can change. There have been a few difficult years in the past, when animals were more scarce and plant food less abundant. When there is not as much, some people don't always want to share. If you only had enough food for one child, which child would you give it to?
I would give up my own food for any child, Ayla said.
For a while, yes, most people would, but for how long? If you don't eat, you would become weak and sick. Then who would take care of your child?
Janda,
Ayla started. Then she stopped and put her hand to her mouth.
Yes.
But Marthona would help, too. And Willemar, even Folara. The whole ninth cave would help,
Ayla rushed ahead.
That's true. Marthona and Willemar would, as long as they were able.
But you know Marthona is not well, and Willemar is not getting younger. Folara is going to mate Aldenor in the late matrimonial this season. When she has a baby of her own, who will she feed first?
It's never that bad, Zelandani. Sometimes things get a little scarce in the spring, but you can always find something to eat,
Ayla said. And I hope that will always be true. But a woman usually feels more secure if she has a mate to help her.
Sometimes two women share a hearth and help each other with their children,
Ayla said. She was thinking about Aldenor's people, the Sarmunai, and Adaroa, who tried to get rid of all the men.
And they may become mates to each other. It is always better to have someone around to help, someone who cares.
But most women choose men. It's the way the mother created most of us, and you have told us why, Ayla. Ayla glanced over toward the man in the bed.
But if you knew everything was going to change, Zelandani, why did you allow it to happen? You're the first. You could have stopped it,
Ayla said. Perhaps for a while. But the mother would not have told you if she didn't want her children to know. And once she decided it was inevitable, it could not be kept a secret. When a truth is ready to be known, it may be delayed, but can't be stopped, Zelandani said. Ayla closed her eyes, thinking. Finally, she opened them and said,
Jontla was so angry, so violent.
Tears were welling up. The violence has always been there, Ayla. It is for most men. You know what Jondalar did to Madraman, and he was little more than a boy then. He has just learned to keep it under control most of the time.
But he couldn't stop hitting him. He nearly killed Larimar. Why?
Because you chose Larimar, Ayla. Everyone heard Jondalar yelling, "He's making my baby." You can be sure no man has forgotten those words. Why did you choose Larimar? Ayla bowed her head, and tears tracked down her face as quiet sobs began. Finally, she got it out.
Because Jondalar chose Marona.
The tears she had held back for so long were suddenly flowing, and there was no stopping them.
Oh, Zelandani, I never knew what jealousy was until that moment when I saw them together. I'd just lost my baby, and I'd been thinking about Jondalar and looking forward to seeing him and maybe starting another baby with him. It hurt so much to see him with Marona. And it made me so angry. I wanted to make him hurt, too.
Zelandani found a piece of soft bandaging material and gave it to her to wipe her eyes and her nose.
And he wouldn't talk to me afterwards. He didn't say he was sorry I lost the baby, or hold me and comfort me. He didn't even touch me, not once. He never said one word to me. It hurt even more when he wouldn't talk to me. He didn't even give me a chance to be angry, to tell him how I felt. I wasn't even sure if he still loved me.
She sniffled and wiped away more tears, then continued.
When Jondalar saw me at the feast and finally came over to say he wanted to talk to me, Larimar happened to be nearby. I know Jondalar has no respect for Larimar. There is no man he dislikes more. He thinks Larimar not only treats his mate and her children badly, he causes other men to do the same. I knew it would make Jondalar angry if I chose Larimar instead of him. I knew it would hurt him. But didn't know he would get so brutal. I didn't know he would try to kill him. I just didn't know.
Zelandani reached for Ayla and held her while she cried. I thought it was something like that, she said, patting her back and letting her get her tears out, but her mind was filling in details. I should have paid closer attention, Zelandani thought. I knew she had just miscarried, and that always brings on feelings of melancholy, and I knew Jandalar was not handling the problem well. He never does in these kind of situations. But Ayla seemed to be. I knew she was upset about Jandalar. I didn't realize how much. I should have. But she's hard to assess. It surprised me that she was called. I didn't think she was quite ready, but I knew it had happened the moment I saw her. I thought it was difficult for her, especially with the miscarriage, but she has always been so strong. I didn't realize until I talked to Marthona just how bad it was. Then, when she told her calling in front of the whole Zelandania, that caught me by surprise, too. I knew something had to be done about it right away. I should have talked to her first. Then I would have known what to expect. It would have given me some time to think of the implications. But there is always so much going on at these summer meetings. It's not an excuse. I should have been there to help her, help them both, and I wasn't. I have to accept responsibility for a large part of this whole unfortunate affair. While she was leaning on the soft shoulder of the large woman, sobbing, and finally letting out the tears she had held back for so long, Ayla kept thinking about the question Zelandani had asked. Why did I choose Larimar? Why did I choose the worst man in the whole cave, probably the worst man at the whole summer meeting? What a horrible summer meeting this has been. Instead of rushing to get here, it would have been better if I hadn't come at all, she said to herself. Then I wouldn't have seen them together. If I hadn't seen Marona and Jandalar, if someone had just told me, it would have been better. I still wouldn't have liked it, but at least every time I shut my eyes, I wouldn't see them. Maybe that's what made me choose Larimar, what made me want to hurt Jandalar so much. I wanted to make him feel the way I was feeling. What does that make me? Wanting to strike back, wanting to hurt, is that worthy of a Zelandani? If I loved him so much, why should I want to hurt him? Because I was jealous. Now I know why the Zelandani tried to prevent it. Jealousy is a terrible thing, Ayla said to herself. I had no right to feel so hurt. Jandalar didn't do anything wrong. It was his right to choose Marona if he wanted to. He wasn't breaking his bond. He was still contributing to the hearth, still helping to provide for John Ayla and me. He has always done more than he had to. He has probably taken care of John Ayla more than I have. I know how bad he always felt about hitting Madraman when he was younger. He hated himself for it. He must feel terrible now. And what will happen to him? What will the Ninth Cave do to him? Or the Zelandania? Or all the Zelandani for almost killing Larimar? Ayla finally sat back, wiped her eyes and her nose, reached for her tea. Zelandani hoped the release had done her some good, but Ayla's mind was still whirling. It's all my fault, she thought. Tears started to fall again as she sat sipping cold tea, almost without her noticing. Larimar is hurt so bad he'll never be the same, and it's my fault. He wouldn't be hurt if I hadn't encouraged him, coaxed him, made him think I wanted him, and she'd had to force herself to do it. She hated the thought of his dirty, sweaty hands touching her. It made her skin crawl, feel itchy, grimy, and she couldn't wash it away. She had bathed, scrubbed herself nearly raw, flushed herself out. Even though she knew it was dangerous, she drank a tea of mistletoe leaves and other herbs that made her vomit and gave her painful cramps to expel anything that may have started. But nothing she did could rid her of the feel of Larimar. Why had she done it? To hurt Jandalar? She was the one who couldn't find time for him. She was the one who was up all night and spent most of her waking hours memorizing songs and histories and symbols and counting words. If she loved him so much, Why didn't she find time for him, too? Was it because she enjoyed her training? She did love it, loved learning all the things she had to know to be Zelindani, all the knowledge that could be revealed and all that was hidden, the symbols that had secret meaning, symbols that she could scratch on a stone or paint on a cloth or weave into a mat. She knew what they meant. All the Zelindania knew what they meant. She could send a stone with symbols on it to another Zelindani, and the person who carried it wouldn't have any idea that it meant anything at all. But the other Zelindani would know. And she loved all the ceremony. Ayla remembered how moved and impressed she had been at her first ceremony, with only the Zelindania that was held deep in that cave. Now she knew how to make them impressive. She had learned all the tricks, though it wasn't just tricks. Some of it was real, frighteningly real. She knew that some of the Zelindania, particularly the older ones, didn't really believe anymore. They had done it all so many times they had grown accustomed to their own magic. Anyone could do it, they said. Maybe anyone could, but not without training, not without help or the magic medicines. What did it mean to fly with no wind, with your body still back with the Zelindania or the cave, to someone who'd forgotten that not everyone could, or who did it only out of habit or duty? Ayla remembered suddenly, at her initiation, hearing the one who was first say that she would be first someday. At the time, Ayla had ignored it. She couldn't imagine herself as first. And besides, she had a mate and a child. How could anyone be first and have a mate and family at the same time? Some of the Zelindania had families, but not many. All she had ever really wanted from the time she was little was to have a mate and children, her own family. Issa had told her she would never have children. Her cave lion totem was too strong, but she had surprised them. She'd had a son. Braud would have hated it if he'd known that by forcing her, he had given her the one thing she wanted. But it had been no gift of pleasures then. Braud didn't choose her because he cared about her. He loathed her. He forced her only to prove he could do whatever he wanted to her, and because he knew she detested it. Now she had done it to herself, forced herself to choose a man she detested, to hurt a man she loved. Look what she had done to Jandalar because of her jealousy. It was her fault that he had almost killed a man. She didn't deserve a family. She couldn't even take care of her family as an acolyte. It would be much more difficult as a full-fledged Zelindani. He'd be better off without her. Maybe she should let him go, let him find another mate. But how could she not be mated to Jandalar? How could she live without Jandalar? The thought brought on a freshet of new tears, which caused Zelindani to wonder. It had seemed that Ayla had almost cried herself out. How could she live without Jandalar, Ayla thought. But how could Jandalar live with her now? She wasn't worthy of him. She had nearly driven him to kill, just because he needed to satisfy his needs. Needs she obviously wasn't satisfying. Even women of the clan would do that any time her mate wanted. Jandalar deserves a better woman. But what about Janela? She's his daughter, too, and he loves her so much. He's raised her more than I have. Janela deserves better than me for a mother. If I break the bond, he can mate again. He's still the most beautiful, no, the most handsome man of all the caves. Everyone thinks so. He would have no trouble finding another woman, even a younger one. I am old already. A younger woman could have more children with him. He can even choose Morona if he wants to. It hurt her just to think it, but she felt a need to punish herself, and she could think of no worse pain to inflict on herself. That's what I'll do. I'll break the bond and give Janela to Jandalar, and let him find another woman to have a family with. When I get back to the ninth cave, I won't move back into my home. I'll move in with Zelandani, or I'll have another place built, or move away and be Zelandani to another cave, if any other cave would have me. Maybe I should just go away, find another valley and live by myself. Zelandani watched the play of emotions across Ayla's face, but she couldn't quite decipher them. There always was something unfathomable about the woman, Zelandani thought, but there is no doubt someday she will be first. Zelandani had never forgotten that day in Marthona's dwelling when Ayla, young and untrained, had nevertheless overpowered the forceful mind of the first. It had shaken her more than she cared to admit.
"If you are feeling better, we should go, Ayla. Zelandani of the ninth cave. We don't want to be late to the meeting. People will have a lot of questions, especially after what happened between Jandalar and Larimar,"
the one who was first among those that served the great Earth Mother said.
"Come on, Jandalar. We need to get to the meeting. There are some questions I want to ask,"
Joharan said.
"You go on. I'll come later,"
Jandalar said, hardly looking up from the bedroll he was sitting on.
"No, I'm afraid not, Jandalar. I was specifically told to make sure you came with me,"
Joharan said.
"Told by whom?"
"Zelandani and Marthona. Who do you think?"
"What if I don't want to go to this meeting?"
Jandalar said, testing his prerogatives. He felt so miserable he didn't want to move.
"Then I guess I'll have to ask this mighty Mamutoi friend of yours to carry you out there, the way he carried you here,"
Jandalar's brother said, grimly smiling at Danug. They were in the shelter that Danug, Druez, Aldenor, and some other men used. Since only men used it, it was called a phalage, although it wasn't with the other phalages on the outskirts of the camp or very far from the ninth cave's regular family dwellings.
"You've hardly moved since. Whether you want to or not, Jandalar, you're going to have to face people. This is an open meeting. No one is going to discuss your situation. That will come later, after we see how well Larimar recovers."
"He should clean up a little," Soliban said. "He still has bloodstains on his clothes."
"I think you're right,"
Joharan said, then looked at Jandalar.
"Are you going to do it yourself, or is somebody going to have to dunk you?"
"I don't care. If you want to dunk me, go ahead,"
Jandalar said.
"Jandalar, get a clean tunic and come to the river with me,"
Danug said, speaking Mamutoi. It was a way to let Jandalar know he had someone he could talk to in private if he didn't want anyone else to know what he was saying. Besides, he enjoyed the ease of speaking his own language rather than always struggling with Zelandani.
"Fine,"
Jandalar said, sighing deeply, then hauling himself up.
"It doesn't matter anyway."
He really didn't care what happened to him. Jandalar was convinced that he had lost everything that mattered. His family, including John Ayla, the respect of his friends and his people, but most of all, Ayla's love, and that he deserved to lose it. Danug watched Jandalar plodding alongside him toward the river, oblivious to everything around him. The young Mamutoi had seen the same kind of problems between the two people he had come so far to see before. People he cared a great deal about and who, he knew, loved each other more than any two people he had ever met. He wished there was some way he could make them see what he and everyone around them knew, but just telling them wouldn't help. They would have to come to the realization on their own, and now it wasn't just them. Jandalar had seriously injured someone, and while Danug was not familiar with the details of Zelandani customs, he knew there would be consequences.
Zelandani moved the drape, pushed the screen aside,
and peeked out the concealed private access at the rear of the large Zelandania dwelling, directly opposite from the regular entrance. She scanned the assembly area that came down from the hillside behind and opened out onto the camp. People had been gathering all morning, and it was nearly full. She had been right about questions. The meaning of the ceremony and the new verse to the mother's song were beginning to be understood, but people were unsure. It was unsettling to think about what changes might happen, especially after Jondalar's behavior. Zelindani looked again to make sure that certain people had arrived, and then waited a little longer to give the last stragglers a chance to get settled. Finally, she gave a signal to a young Zelindani who conveyed the "She's ready" sign to the others, and when everything was prepared, Zelindani stepped outside. Zelindani, who was first, was a woman who exhibited great presence, and her magnificent size, both in height and mass, contributed to her bearing. She also commanded a large repertoire of techniques and tactics to keep gatherings focused on points she wanted to emphasize, and she would be using all her skills, both intuitive and learned, to project confidence and certainty to the large number of people who were watching her with such intensity. Knowing how people had a tendency to speak out, she announced that, since there were so many people, it would help keep things more orderly if questions were asked by the leaders of the caves or by only one member of each family. But if someone felt a strong need to say something, it should be brought up. Joharan asked the first question, but it was a point everyone wanted clarified.
"That new verse, I want to be sure I understand. Does it mean that Jaradal and Sathona are my children, not just Proleva's?"
"Yes, that is right," Zelindani, who was first, said. "Jaradal is your son. Sathona is your daughter, Joharan, as much as they are Proleva's son and daughter."
"And it is the gift of pleasure from the great Earth Mother that makes life begin inside a woman?" asked Bramival, the leader of the 14th cave.
"Dani's gift to us is not only for pleasure. It is also the gift of life."
"But pleasures are shared often. Women don't get pregnant that often," said another voice, unable to wait.
"The great Earth Mother still makes the final choice. Dani has not given up all her knowledge, nor all her prerogatives. She still decides when a woman will be blessed with new life," the first said.
"Then what's the difference between using a man's spirit or the essence of his organ to start a baby?" Bramival asked.
"It's very clear. If a woman never shares pleasure with a man, she will never have a child. She cannot just hope that someday the mother will choose the spirit of some man and give her one. A woman must honor the mother by sharing her gift of pleasures. The man must release his essence inside her so that it can mix with the essence of a woman that is waiting for it," the great woman said.
"Some women never get pregnant," said Tormadon, the leader of the 19th cave.
"Yes, that's true. I have never had a child. Though I have honored the mother often, I have never become pregnant. I don't know why," the first said. "Perhaps because the mother chose me for a different purpose. I know it would have been very difficult for me to serve the mother as I have if I had a mate and children. That is not to say that Zelindania should not have children. Some Zelindania do, and still serve her well, though it may be easier for a Zelindani who is a man to be mated and have children at his hearth than for a woman. A man does not have to bear a child, or give birth, or nurse. Some women are able to do both, especially if their calling is strong, but they must have mates and families that are very caring and willing to help." Zelindani noticed several people looking towards Jondalar, sitting with the Mamutoi visitors somewhat uphill from the 9th cave, and not with the woman to whom he was mated. Ayla, who was holding John Ayla on her lap, sat beside Marthona, with the wolf between them near the front of the audience. She was close to the ninth cave, but also close to the ranks of the Zelandania. Most people believed that with her control of animals and her healing skills, even before she became an acolyte, Ayla's calling had to be strong. And until this summer, when all their troubles began, everyone was aware of how caring Jondalar had been. Many people believed it was Morona who was at the root of their troubles. She was sitting with her cousin, Wailopa, and some friends from the fifth cave. But now it had escalated far beyond that. Although word had gone out that Larimar had regained consciousness, he was still recovering inside the Zelandania Lodge, and only they knew how badly he was hurt. "My mate shares the gift of pleasures with other men, not just me, at mother festivals and ceremonies," a man in the audience said. "Now the questions are getting ticklish," Zelandani thought. "Festivals and ceremonies are held for sacred purposes. Sharing pleasures is a sacred act. They honor the Great Earth Mother. If a child is conceived, then it is with her intention. It should be considered a favored child. Remember, Donnie still chooses when a woman will become pregnant." There was a scattering of barely audible comments from the audience. Kareja, the leader of the 11th cave, stood up.
"Willidan has asked me to ask a question for him, but I think he should ask it himself."
"If you think so, then certainly he should," Zelandani said.
"My mate was a Danyi woman one summer after we were mated," the man began. "She wasn't having any luck getting a baby started and wanted to make the offering to honor the mother and encourage her to start one. It seemed to work. She did have a child after that, and three more since then. But now I wonder, did any of those children come from me?"
This must be handled with great delicacy, Zelandani thought. "All children born to your mate are your children," she said.
"But how do I know if they were started by me or some other man?"
"Tell me, Willidan, how old is your first child?"
"He can count 12 years. Almost a man."
There was pride in his voice. "Were you happy when your mate became pregnant with him and when he was born?"
"Yes. We wanted children at our hearth."
"So you love him?"
"Of course I love him."
"Would you love him more if you knew for sure that he was started by your essence?" He glanced at the boy.
"No, of course not," he said, frowning.
"If you knew the rest of your children were started with your own essence, would you love them more?" He paused, thinking about the point he knew she was making.
"No, I could not love them more."
"Then does it make any difference if the essence that started them came from you or someone else?" Zelandani noticed that his frown deepened. She decided to continue. "I have never been pregnant. I have never conceived a child, though there was a time when I wanted one more than you will know. I am content now. I know the mother chose what was best for me. But it is possible, Willidan, that you were born as I was. Perhaps for some reason known only to Donnie, your essence could not start a child with your mate at that time. But the Great Earth Mother, in her wisdom, gave you and your mate the children you wanted. If you were not the one who started them, would you be willing to give them back if you found the name of the man who may have started them?"
"No, I have provided for them all their lives," Willidan said.
"Exactly. You have cared for them. You love them. They are the children of your hearth. That means they are your children, Willidan."
"Yes, they are the children of my hearth. But you said, if I am not the one who started them, do you think they could have been started by my essence?"
Willidan asked, a bit wistfully. "It may well be that the honor your mate paid to the mother
was accepted as sufficient offering, and that she allowed your essence to start all of them. We don't know. But if you could not love them more, Willadan, does it make any difference?
No, I guess not.
They may have been started by your essence, or they may not have, Zelandani said, but they will always be more than the children of your hearth. They are your children.
Will we ever know for sure?
I don't know if we will ever know. With a woman, it is obvious. She is either pregnant or not. With a man, his children are always the children of his mate. That's the way it has always been. Nothing has changed. No man can be certain who started the children of his hearth.
Jondalar can, came a voice from the audience. Everyone stopped and stared at the one who had spoken. It was Jaladan, a young man from the third cave. He was sitting with Falara's friend, Galea, whom he had mated 2 years before. He suddenly flushed from all the penetrating attention, including the hard look from Zelandani.
Well, he can, he said defensively. Everyone knows Ayla never chose anyone but him. Until last night. If children are started from the essence of a man's organ and Ayla never shared pleasures with anyone but Jondalar, then the child of his hearth has to be his, had to come from his essence. That's what he was fighting about last night, wasn't he? He kept screaming, "He's making my baby," every time he hit Larimar.
Now all the attention was focused on Jondalar, and he squirmed under the intense scrutiny. Some people glanced at Ayla, but she was sitting rigidly still, looking down. Suddenly Joharan stood up.
Jondalar was not in control of himself. He let himself drink too much, and it drowned his brains, he said with exasperated sarcasm.
There were smiles and snickers.
I'll wager his head was full of the morning after when the sun came up, another young man called out.
There was a touch of admiration in his tone, as though he found Jondalar's violent behavior somehow laudable.
Since both Jondalar and Larimar are from the Ninth Cave, this is an issue that will be settled by the Ninth Cave. This is not the place to discuss Jondalar's actions,
Joharan said, trying to end the issue. He had heard the appreciation in the voices of some of the young men, and the last thing he wanted was for anyone to be emulating that kind of behavior.
Except to say, Jemeral, Zelandani added, that Jondalar will be suffering from more than a morning after headache, I'm afraid. There will be serious consequences to pay. You can be sure. It was difficult to know all the people at the meeting, though she tried. Their clothing was always a clue, as well as the beads and belts and other accoutrements they wore. This was a young man from the fifth cave, related to their Zelandani. They all tended to be a little showier than most, and wore more beads, since they were known for making and trading them. And he was sitting closer to the front, which allowed her to see him clearly enough to recognize him.
But I think I understand how he felt, Jemeral persisted. What if I want the child of my mate to come from me?
Yes, another man spoke out. What then?
Another voice added.
What if I want the children of my hearth to be mine?
Zelandani waited until the commotion settled down, surveying the audience to see that most of the comments were coming from the fifth cave. Then she fixed the entire group with a stern look.
You want the children of your hearth to be yours, Jemeral, she said, looking directly at the young man who had asked the question. Do you mean, like your clothes or your tools or your beads? You want to own them?
No, I didn't mean that, the young man stuttered.
I'm glad to hear that, because children cannot be owned. They can't be yours or your mate's. No one can own them. Children are ours to love and care for, to provide for, to teach, as the mother does for us. And you can do that, whether they come from your essence or from someone else's.
We are all children of the great Earth Mother. We learn from her. Remember in the Mother's song, to woman and man the Mother gave birth, and then for their home she gave them the earth, the water, the land, and all her creation. To use them with care was their obligation. It was their home to use, but not to abuse.
Several Zelandania joined in the response. Then they continued,
for the children of Earth the Mother provided the gifts to survive, and then she decided to give them the gift of pleasure and caring that honors the Mother with the joy of their pairing. The gifts are well earned when honors returned. She provides for us, cares for us, teaches us, and in return for her gifts we honor her.
The one who was first continued,
Donnie's gift of the knowledge of life was not given to you so that you might own the children born to your hearth, to claim them as yours.
She looked at several of the young men who had spoken out.
It was given so that we would know that women are not the only ones who are the blessed of Donnie. Men have a purpose that is equal to that of women. They are not here just to provide and to help. Men are necessary. Without men, there would be no children. Isn't that enough? Do your children have to be yours? Do you have to own them?
The young men exchanged sheepish looks, but Zelandani wasn't sure if they truly understood. Then a young woman spoke up.
What about before? We know our mothers and our grandmothers. I am my mother's daughter. But what about the men?
The young woman wasn't immediately familiar to Zelandani, but reflexively the astute mind of the first tried to place her. She was sitting with the 23rd cave, and the designs and patterns on her tunic and necklace indicated she was a member of that cave, not from another cave and sitting with friends. Though the outfit she wore indicated a woman and not a girl, she was obviously quite young. Probably just had her first rites, the Danyer thought. For one so young to speak out in a large crowd indicated she was either brash and impetuous or brave and accustomed to being with people who spoke their minds, which would indicate leadership. The leader of the 23rd cave was a woman, Dinara. Zelandani recalled then that Dinara's eldest daughter was among those having first rites this year, and Zelandani noticed that Dinara was smiling at the young woman. Then she remembered the young woman's name.
Nothing has changed, Dereza, the first said. Children have always been the result of the joining of a man and a woman. Just because we didn't know before doesn't mean it hasn't always been that way. Donnie just chose to tell us now. She must have felt we were ready for this knowledge. Do you know who your mother's mate was when you were born?
Yes, everyone knows who her mate is. It's John Corin,
Dereza said.
Then John Corin is your father,
Zelandani said. She had been waiting for the right opportunity to bring up the word that had been chosen.
Father is the name that has been given to a man who has children. A man is necessary for a life to begin, but he doesn't carry the baby inside him, nor does he give birth or nurse. But a man can love the child as much as a mother. He is a far mother, a father. It was also chosen to indicate that while women are the blessed of Donnie, men may now think of themselves as the favored of Donnie. It is similar to mother, but the fa sound was chosen to make it clear that it is a name for a man, just as Falaj is the name for the men's place.
There was an immediate outburst of noisy talk from the gathering. In the audience, Ayla heard the new term being repeated several times, as though the people were tasting it, getting used to it. Zelandani waited until the noise settled down.
You, Dereza, are the daughter of your mother, Dinara, and you are the daughter of your father, John Corin. Your mother has sons and daughters, and your father also has sons and daughters. Those children may call him father, just as they call the woman who gave birth to them mother.
What if the man who coupled with my mother and started me was not the man she mated? Asked Jemeral, the young man from the fifth cave.
The man who is mated to your mother, the one who is the man of your hearth, is your father, Zelandani said without hesitation.
But if he didn't start me, how could he be my father?
Jemeral persisted. That young man is going to be trouble, the one who was first thought. You don't know who may have started you, but you know the man who lives with you and your mother. He is the one who is most likely to have fathered you. If you don't know of anyone else for sure, he may as well not exist, and there is no point in naming a relationship that does not exist. Your mother's mate is the one who promised to provide for you. He's the one who cared for you, loved you, helped to raise you. It is not the coupling, it is the caring that makes a man your father. If the man to whom your mother was mated had died, and if she mated another man who loved you and cared for you, would you love him less?
But which one is the real father?
You may always call the man who provides for you father. When you name your ties, as in a formal introduction, your father is the man who was mated to your mother when you were born, the man you call the man of your hearth. If the one who provides for you is not the one who was there when you were born, you will refer to him as your second father, to distinguish between the two when it is necessary, Zelandani explained. She was glad now that she spent a night, when she was unable to sleep, thinking about all the kinship ramifications this new knowledge would cause. The one who was first had another announcement she wanted to make.
This may be a good time to bring up one more matter that needs to be mentioned. The Zelandania felt that the men need to be included in some of the rituals and customs associated with the welcoming of a new baby, to give them a deeper feeling and understanding of their part in the creation of new life. Therefore, from now on, the men will name the male children born to their hearths. The women will, of course, continue to name the female children. Her statement was received with mixed feelings. The men looked surprised, but several of them were smiling. She could see by their expressions, however, that some of the women did not want to give up their prerogative of naming the children. No one wanted to make an issue of it just then, and no questions were asked, but she knew this idea was not settled. There would be problems, she was sure.
"What about children who are born to women who are not mated?" asked a very young-looking woman, who was nevertheless cuddling a baby in her arms.
Second cave, Zelandani thought, looking at her clothing and jewelry. Could that be a child of last summer's first rites?
The women who give birth before mating are blessed, like the women who have new life started within them at the time they are mated. A woman who has been blessed with a child has demonstrated that she can carry and deliver a healthy baby, and she is often the one who is chosen to be blessed again. Until she mates, her children are provided for by her family or her cave, and their father is Lumi, the mate of Dani, the great Earth Mother.
She smiled at the young woman.
Nothing has really changed, Shalita.
The name had suddenly come to her. The cave always provides for a woman with children who has no mate, whether her mate was lost to the next world or not yet chosen. But most men find a young woman with a baby very desirable. She usually mates quickly, since she can bring a child to a man's hearth immediately, a child who is a favorite of Dani. The man she mates becomes the child's father, of course, the large woman explained, and watched the woman who was little more than a girl, glancing shyly at a young man from the third cave, who was staring at her with rapt adoration.
But what about the man who is really the father? Said the familiar voice of the young man from the fifth cave, who had been asking so many questions. Isn't the man whose essence actually started the baby the father? Zelandani noticed him glancing at the same young woman who was holding the baby. She was looking at the other man. Ah, now I understand, the Danyar thought. Maybe not a first rights child, but a first infatuation. She was a little surprised at how easily she had fallen into the pattern of thinking about the birth of children being caused by the coupling of a man and a woman. It all seemed to fit into place so logically now. Ayla had also been aware of the young man from the fifth cave and had noticed the byplay between the young woman and the two men. Does he think he started her baby? Could he be jealous? She wondered. Ayla realized that she was now more aware not only of the concept, but of the intense feelings associated with jealousy. I didn't know this gift of knowledge from the Great Earth Mother would be so complicated. I'm not sure it's such a wonderful gift at all, she said to herself. If a woman with a child has never been mated, then the man she mates, the one who promises to provide and care for the child, becomes the father of her baby. Of course, if a woman chooses to mate with more than one man, they would share the name father equally. Zelandani said, trying to show a possible alternative. But a woman doesn't have to mate with anyone she doesn't want. Isn't that right? The young woman said. The first noticed that the Zelandani of the fifth cave was climbing the hill toward the area where his cave was gathered.
Yes, that has always been true, and it hasn't changed.
She saw that the Danyar was sitting beside the young man who had so many questions and turned to take a question from an entirely different segment of the audience.
"What is my father's father called?" asked a man from the 11th cave.
Zelandani breathed a quiet sigh of relief, an easy question.
"A mother's mother is a grandmother and is usually called grandma. A father's father is a grandfather, or grandfa. A father's mother is a grandmother, too, but to distinguish between them, she will still be called grandam. A father's father is a grandfather, or grandaf. When you name your ties, your mother's mother is your close grandmother, or your grandma, and your mother's father is your close grandfather, or your grandfa, because you're always certain who your mother is.
What if you don't know whose essence started your mother? The leader of the fifth cave asked. Or if they are walking in the next world, how can you name the tie?
If you know the man who was mated to your mother's mother, he would be your grandfather. The same is true for your father. Even if he is in the next world, your father was started by a man who coupled with his mother, just as your mother was started by a man who put the essence of his organ inside her mother, Zelandani carefully explained.
No! No! Came a cry from the audience. It's not true! She has done it again! She has betrayed me just when I was starting to trust her!
Everyone turned to look. On the far outside edge of the large group of people from the ninth cave, a man was standing.
It's a lie! It's all a lie! That woman is trying to trick you! The mother would never have told her that!
He screamed, pointing at Ayla.
She's a lying, evil woman!
Shading her eyes, Ayla looked up and saw Brukhaval. Brukhaval? Why is he screaming at me like that? I don't understand, she thought. What did I do to him?
I come from the spirit of a man who was chosen by the Great Mother to join with the spirit of my mother,
Brukhaval shrieked.
My mother came from the spirit of a man who was chosen by Dani to join with the spirit of her mother. She did not come from the organ of an animal, not from the essence of any organ,
I am a man. I am not a flathead. I am not a flathead.
His voice couldn't sustain the anguished scream. It cracked on the last words and ended on a sobbing wail. Chapter 38 Brukhoval suddenly started running down the hill, then across the small field, and kept on going, leaving the campsite behind without looking back. Several men, mostly from the Ninth Cave, started after him, Joharan and Jandalar among them, hoping that once he ran out of breath, they could talk to him, calm him down, bring him back. But Brukhoval ran as though the spirit of the dead were chasing him. For all his resistance to it, he had inherited the strength and the stamina of the man of the clan who was his grandfather. Though they ran faster in the beginning and started to catch up, the men who were chasing after Brukhoval did not have his endurance and could not keep up the pace he set. They finally stopped, gasping, bent over, some rolling on the ground, trying to catch their breaths in a collective agony of aching sides and raw throats.
"I should have gotten Racer,"
Jandalar rasped, barely able to speak.
"He couldn't have outrun a horse."
When they finally trudged back, the meeting was in disarray. People were standing up, walking around, talking. Zelandani didn't want it to end like that and had called for a pause until the men returned, hopefully with Brukhoval. When they returned without him, she decided to finish up quickly. It is unfortunate that Brukhoval of the Ninth Cave of the Zelandani feels as he does. His sensitivity about his background is well known, but no one knows for sure what really happened to his grandmother. We only know that she was lost for some time and finally found her way back and later gave birth to Brukhoval's mother. Anyone lost for so long is bound to have adverse effects from the ordeal, and Brukhoval's grandmother was not in her right mind when she returned. She was so full of fears, no one could believe or even understand much of what she said. The daughter she bore was not physically strong, probably because of her mother's ordeal, and her pregnancy and the birth of her son was so hard for her, she died as a result. It's likely that Brukhoval bears the imprint of his mother's difficult pregnancy in his stature and appearance, though it is fortunate that he grew strong and healthy. I think Brukhoval was entirely right when he said he is a man. He is a Zelandani man of the Ninth Cave, a good man who has much to offer. I'm sure he will decide to return to us after he's had time to reconsider. And I know the Ninth Cave will welcome him back when he does, the one who was first said. Then she continued, I think it is time to close this meeting. We all have much to think about, and you can all continue the discussion we started here with your own Zelandani. As people were getting up again to leave, the first signaled to the leader of the Fifth Cave, Will the Fifth Cave stay a little longer and join me here near the lodge? She asked. I have a matter of importance that concerns you. Might as well get this unpleasant chore over with while I'm at it, she thought. The meeting had not gone at all the way she'd hoped. Jandalar's fight the night before had set the wrong tone in the beginning, and Brukhoval's abrupt departure left people feeling unsettled at the end. I'm sorry I have to do this, the first said to the group of people of all ages that constituted the Fifth Cave. Madraman was among them, as well as their Zelandani. She picked up a carry sack that was on a table near the back of the lodge and turned to face the acolyte. Does this look familiar to you, Madraman? He looked, and then he blanched, and glanced around, looking worried and wary. It's yours, isn't it? It has your markings. Several people were nodding their heads. Everyone knew it was his. It was quite distinctive. They had seen him with it.
Where did you get that? He asked.
Ayla found it, hidden in the deep of Fountain Rock, after you were called to go in there.
the first said with heavy sarcasm.
I might have guessed it was her,
Madraman mumbled. She wasn't looking for anything. She was sitting on the floor near the large round niche at the back and happened to feel it in a hidden space at the bottom of a wall. She thought someone had forgotten it and wanted to return it to him, Zelandani said.
Why would she think someone had forgotten it if it was hidden?
Madraman said. There was no use pretending any more. Because she wasn't thinking straight. She had just lost her baby and very nearly her life in that cave, the first said.
What is this about? The leader asked.
Madraman has been an acolyte for a long time. He wanted to join the ranks of the Zelandania and was tired of waiting to be called. She emptied the carry sack on the table. Out fell the remains of food, the water bag, the lamp, and fire-making equipment, and the cloak. He hid this inside the cave, then pretended that he felt the call. He stayed inside a little more than 2 days, with plenty of food, water, light, and even a covering for warmth. He hid this, then came out acting groggy and disoriented, and claimed he was ready.
You mean he lied about his call?
The leader asked. In a word, yes.
If it hadn't been for her, you would never have known, Madraman spat out.
You are wrong, Madraman. We knew. This only confirmed it. What makes you think you can fool the Zelandania? We have all been through it. Don't you think we'd know the difference? Zelandani said.
Why didn't you say something before?
Some of us were trying to find a way to give you every opportunity. Some thought, or hoped, that it wasn't intentional. They wanted to make sure that you hadn't fooled yourself in your strong desire to become one who serves, until Ayla brought this to us. You would not have become Zelandani in any case, but you might have remained an acolyte, Madraman. Now that is no longer possible. The Great Earth Mother doesn't want to be served by a liar and a cheat. The powerful woman said in tones that left no doubt about her feelings. Kimordan, leader of the fifth cave of the Zelandania, the first continued, will you and your cave bear witness?
We will, he replied.
We will, said the cave in unison.
Madraman of the fifth cave of the Zelandanyi, former acolyte, the first intoned, you may never again put yourself out as a member of the Zelandania, not as an acolyte or in any other manner. You may never again attempt to treat someone's illness or offer advice about the ways of the mother or in any way assume the duties of the Zelandania. Do you understand?
But what am I supposed to do now? That's all I've trained for. I don't know how to be anything but an acolyte, Madraman said.
If you return everything you have received from the Zelandania, you can go back to your cave and think about learning some other craft, Madraman, and be grateful I am not imposing a fine and announcing it to the whole camp.
They'll all find out anyway, Madraman said, then raising his voice. You were never going to let me be a Zelandani. You've always hated me, you and Jondalar and your little favorite. Ayla, the flathead lover. You've been out to get me from the beginning, Zolina.
There was a gasp from the fifth cave. Not one of them would have dared to be so disrespectful to the one who was first as to call her by her former name. Most would have been afraid to. Even Madraman paused in his tirade when he saw the expression on the face of the first. She was, after all, a woman of formidable powers. He turned on his heel and stomped away, not sure what he was going to do as he headed for the falage he had sometimes shared with Larimar, Brukhaval, and the rest. It was empty when he got there. Most camps were serving meals after the long meeting, and the rest of the men had gone to find something to eat. It suddenly came to him that neither Larimar nor Brukhaval would be back at all. Larimar would be a long time recovering, and who knew what Brukhaval would do.
Madraman walked over and took a small water bag of Barma from Larimar's traveling pack. He sat down on the sleeping roll and drank most of it down in a few gulps